Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Of Ishapanishad, just one point I want to bring to your attention about one thing I said yesterday. The Ishapanishad is actually part of the Yajur Veda. I said Atharva Veda, I'm sorry, as we read yesterday about the defects of the conditioned soul to make mistakes. What a mistake. Prabhupada makes reference to this in one of the earlier verses. Oh, it's in the purport of Mantra 1. Prabhupada makes the point that Ishapanishad is part of Yajur Veda. Okay, so this is speeding back a little. Okay, so we were on, what was it, page 8 of the introduction, Roman numerals V1 III 8. We had been through the points made in the first paragraph of our little synopsis on page 3 of the overview book, and we're moving on to the second paragraph, heading in that direction at least. Prabhupada makes the point, and it's an important, interesting point, important point, between or at the beginning of page 9, that the Vedas are not compiled by human beings, and therefore we accept that they don't have those four defects which are very common or totally universal characteristics of humans. So, and the Vedas are also dealing in many respects with subject matters which are beyond our perception anyway. It's truly superhuman or transcendental information. Transcendental literally means above and beyond your senses. That is transcendental. So in a certain sense, what is, for our sense of sight, what is going on the floor above the ceiling here is transcendental to our sense of sight. So if there are subject matters, important subject matters particularly, which are beyond your sensory capabilities, then you have to have some source of knowledge which is on that level and is able to actually transmit information about that realm, that subject matter. And Srila Prabhupada makes a very interesting point, which I think we all know very well. If you want to know who your father is, then you have to ask your mother, because it's beyond your sense. So in a similar way, the Vedas are taken to be the mother, Shruti. This is at the top of page 9 of the introduction. Shruti is considered to be like a mother. We take so much knowledge from our mother. So, yeah, our background, our family background like that, we have no way of seeing that. It's already happened before we appeared. But we can ask our mother, and she can tell us. So there's so much information about who we are and what we are and where we belong and so on, how it is we're entangled here, how to get out of the entanglement here and go back to Godhead. But that's beyond us in terms of just our own ability to perceive and understand directly. So this information we get from the Vedas. The Vedas are like the mother, and Brahma is like the grandfather. So, let's see. Then down the bottom of page 9, Srila Prabhupada starts talking about the three kinds of evidence. We did refer to this a bit yesterday. Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. So, actually, there are more ways of acquiring knowledge, according to the Vedas. We're not going to go into them all, but these are the three which we accept as Vaishnavas. We accept Pratyaksha, direct sensory perception, seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, tasting. We accept that as a means for acquiring knowledge. Then Anuman, we mentioned yesterday, and one of the Mataji's was saying that there was no sort of explanation directly in the purport, in the introduction. But if you look on page 12, just jumping ahead a couple of pages, page 12 of the introduction, towards the top there, Prabhupada refers to, you'll see in the fourth line down, the deductive process. So this is Anuman, inference. You deduce that this is like this and this is like that, so therefore something else is like something. This is inference. And in fact, Prabhupada uses the example that we used yesterday. Your father says man is mortal. Your sister says man is mortal. Everyone says man is mortal. You don't need to experiment. So this is inferring. This is the idea. Man is mortal. Socrates is a man. So Socrates is mortal. Inference. So we accept Pratyaksha, direct perception. Did everyone mark themselves present? Anyone not mark themselves present? We accept direct perception. We accept inference. Then there's Shabda. Shabda means hearing from the Vedic literatures particularly, or hearing from a bona fide representative of the Vedic literatures. This is Shabda, transcendental sound, this very reliable source of information, the Vedas. The Vedas are Shabda. And anyone who repeats the Vedas is also producing Shabda. So we accept the three, but when one or two, direct perception or inference, conflict with Shabda, then we accept Shabda. This is how we... I mean, it's not that we just accept direct experience, we just accept inference. These things actually, they need to be confirmed by Shabda. And if there's any conflict, we accept Shabda. Like, for example, it's a very simple example. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains right at the beginning that we're all spirit soul. And we, of course, accept that as devotees. But, you know, many surgeons and people like that dissect human bodies and, you know, take them to pieces. And I don't think any of them have found a soul yet. So on the basis of direct sensory perception, these surgeons and people could all say that, no, no, there's no soul. We didn't see one. We saw everything. We didn't see a soul, though. But Shabda says there is a soul. So we accept that. Because Shabda, among other things, Shabda has access to this transcendental realm of awareness, which our senses don't have access to. So this is the idea. We accept all three, but the first two have to be confirmed by Shabda. And if there's a conflict, we accept the Shabda. So Srila Prabhupada goes on, and then on page 11, in order to... Prabhupada's making the point that we accept Krishna as authority. This again is addressing the issue which we discussed a bit yesterday. Why do we accept the Vedas as being authoritative? You know, who is giving the stamp of approval which we are meant to accept? So first of all, we can say that Krishna does. But then you might say that, well, you know, Krishna, we've never seen Krishna. He sounds like a rather fantastic character. So why should we accept Krishna? So then Srila Prabhupada mentions a number of more sort of, I don't know what, down-to-earth types of authorities, you might say, or at least anyone would accept them as real historical persons. Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami. So they're very important and famous philosophers and saintly people and big scholars. And they accept Krishna. They're not just foolish people. And even on the other side, they are Vaishnavas, of course. On the other side, you've got the Mayavadis, who are at odds with the Vaishnavas in many ways. But even the leader of the Mayavadis, Shankaracharya, even he accepts Krishna. Narayana Paro Vyaktat. Those are famous words from Shankaracharya himself. Bhajagovinda, 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 Mudha Mate. I forget the rest of the word verse, but he's saying, telling his followers, just worship Govind, just worship Krishna, and don't worry about all this word jugglery which I've trained you in. So these fairly diverse persons, but they're all in their own rights, in their own fields, they're big, big authorities. They also accept the Vedas. So we can have faith in them and accept their idea, and we can accept the Vedas. So, then going over to page 12, Srila Prabhupada, in the second paragraph on page 12, makes reference to a well-known verse in Brahma Samhita about how Krishna, or the spiritual realm, is way beyond us. The idea is that you can travel at the speed of the mind for a long time, many years, but still you won't get any closer to Krishna, because he's not approached in those like geographical, very mundane terms. Speed of the mind means, Prabhupada would say, he was in America, and he said that now, there's a nice conversation actually, Srila Prabhupada, with one lady in Prabhupada, just when Prabhupada had first arrived in New York. And this lady was telling Srila Prabhupada that, I can see you miss your home. And Srila Prabhupada, I don't know if you've heard that tape, it's a very nice conversation. Satsarup Maharaj played it in his course last year. This lady is being sympathetic in a mundane but nice way to Prabhupada. I can see you're homesick, you're missing your home. And Srila Prabhupada says, yes, I miss Vrindavan. And I think of it a lot. And then he says that, I'm thinking of Vrindavan and I'm there. I'm there. That is the speed of the mind. So that's the speed of the mind. You can be sitting in New York and you can be in Vrindavan in an instant, not even a second, just a fraction of a second. You can be in Vrindavan, which is some thousands of miles away. So in Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says that if you want to approach Krishna, if you want to have access to Krishna, then you could try traveling at the speed of the mind for many, many years. long time, millions of years. So, you know, you would have gone an awfully long way by material standards, millions of years at the speed of the mind. But you won't have got any closer to Krishna. It's not that you will have moved one inch or, you know, one millionth of the way, something like that. You actually won't have got any closer. So that process in general is defective and it won't work. So we don't use that process, mundane process, speculating with the mind. And it's called Aroha Panta, is it? The word is used somewhere here. Aroha means the ascending process, and Avaroha means the descending. Oh, here it is. It's right in the middle of page 12. This process of researching, speculating, trying to access Krishna in that way, this process is called in Sanskrit Aroha, the ascending process. So we take the descending process. The descending process, we're still in the second paragraph. We say it must be received through the bona fide channel of the Guru Parampara, coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna himself. So down at the bottom of page 12, Srila Prabhupada, about this descending process, getting knowledge, coming down through disciplic succession, Prabhupada is paraphrasing, he's indirectly quoting a very important verse, which he would quote as such frequently. He says, therefore the Vedic injunction is that one must approach. The word compulsory is used, a bona fide spiritual master, a guru. And what is the qualification of a spiritual master? He has rightly heard the Vedic message from the right source. Otherwise, he's not bona fide. He must practically be firmly established in Brahman. These are the two qualities. So just to wake any of you up who are having difficulty staying awake spontaneously, may not be on the spontaneous platform yet. Who can tell us what is that verse? It's Mundaka Upanishad. No. That's Shweta Ashvatara Upanishad. Oh, very good. Yes. Tad vigyanartam sagurum eva bigachchet samit pani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.12. In order to learn the transcendental science, one must approach the bona fide spiritual master in disciplic succession, who is fixed in absolute truth. Well, that's a sort of slightly paraphrased translation. But he must be Shrotriyam, he must have heard, and Brahmanishtam, he must be fixed in Brahman. And the term is Eva Abhigachet. Abhigachet means you must approach, you must come to him, and Eva means you must. It's imperative. So this is the system. This is the system of receiving the Vedas, or receiving knowledge, really, through the disciplic succession. Then, over onto page 13, right at the bottom. Oh, well, anyway, on page 13, the main body of text there, Prabhupada is talking about how Krishna is beyond our senses. He's unlimited, and if we try and find him by research, just won't work. It just won't work. Krishna, when he was on this planet, he had children, then he had grandchildren, a multitude, 161,080 children, and 1,610,800 or something like that grandchildren. And he had great-grandchildren too. So, but he looked like a 16-year-old boy. So when you hear things like this, you think, oh, okay, fine. Some sort of mumbo-jumbo or mythology. But actually it's true. It is a fact. But the thing is, in order to accommodate this, you have to adjust yourself to the descending process. You have to be ready for that. And then you'll hear things like this and you'll think, oh, right, fine. And you won't get put off or become confused. So it's very important because we're dealing with subject matter. This submissive attitude of hearing and accepting in disciplic succession is extremely important. Practically the most important thing, actually, that one can submissively hear and absorb the bona fide teachings which are actually coming in the bona fide line. And then you don't have to be a big genius or a great renunciate or a big philosopher. Even a child can do it. Just become the humble servant of the servant. So then Srila Prabhupada goes on from the bottom of page 13. We're now in paragraph 3 of our introduction in the overview book. Bit of the history of the Vedas. We mentioned this yesterday. Originally there was only one Veda, but Vyas divided it. That Veda in fact was called Yajurveda, but then Vyas divided it, so he's called Veda Vyas. Vyas means divider. That is the literal translation of the word Vyas. So Veda Vyas means he who divided the Veda. Singular, Veda Vyas. He divided the Veda into its various divisions, taking into consideration the nature of the audience. So he manifested the four Vedas, and then for the benefit of Stri, Sudra, Dwija Bandhu Nam, all sorts of people who are less competent. So he presented the same message, but in a way that was very attractive to such people in the form of Mahabharata and the Puranas, which are in the form of stories, which are very, you know, attractive for practically anyone. But at the same time, they have the same knowledge. It's not that they're less. Actually, in one sense, they're even more. Particularly Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanta Sutra, and then Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this way, we come to the end of the introduction, and we're now going to go on and let's turn over to page 4 of our overview book, and we give a little summary of the overview. You'll see we've divided, there are 19 mantras, the invocation and 18 mantras 1 to 18. So we've divided them up according to the different themes which are focused on in different groups of mantras. We've divided them into 5 sections. The first is invocation and mantras 1 and 2, then mantra 3, then mantras 4 to 8, mantras 9 to 14, and then mantras 15 to 18. So what I propose to do now is that we can all recite these mantras section by section and just have a look at the translations, and then we'll see how the different mantras are fitting into the different sections. So if you could open up your Ishapanishads on page 1, the invocation. And you can repeat after me. Om Purnamada Purnamidam.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam.
Purna Purna Mudachyate. Purnasya Purnam Adaya. Purnam Eva Vashishyate. Translation. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he's completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Then mantra one. It's on page 4. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. Yatkincha jagatyam jagat. Tena tyaktena bunjita. Magridha kasya svidanam. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which is set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. And then mantra 2, which is on page 10. Kurvan eveha karmani. Jivishet chatam sama. Evam twainanyate tosti. Na karma lipyate nare. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. So we've grouped these verses together. The little summary I gave, you'll see there, four of the overview book, we've said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and therefore his creation is too. He has perfectly made arrangements for all living beings, and if we learn to live according to his arrangements, we can live happily on the spiritual platform, even in this material world. So that is the basic message there. It's giving like a very fundamental definition of reality. What is this universe, this world in which we're living, and how we can find our place in it and be happy and everything will be perfect. Okay, so let's go on to mantra 3. It's on page 14. We've put this mantra in its own section on its own. And we've said in the overview book, summarized it, that those who abuse the opportunity of the human form of life have a very dim future. Asurya namate loka.
Asurya namate loka.
Andena tamasavrita.
Andena tamasavrita.
Tamste pretya bigachanti.
Tamste pretya bigachanti.
Yeke chatma hanojana. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. As we mentioned yesterday, the speaker, I'm not sure who it is, but the speaker is using strong language. The killer of the soul. Atma Hana. Killers of the soul. So the next section is, the Supreme Lord is the greatest person and possesses unique characteristics. Within him, all contradictions are resolved. The pure devotees see everything and everyone in relation to him and are therefore completely free from anxiety on the transcendental platform. By rendering devotional service in this consciousness, they realize him directly. An aged Akam and a soldier V.O. Naina Deva Apnuvan Purvam Arshat. Tadavatonyan at Yeti Tishtat. Tasmin apo matarishva didhati. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place, he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. So we see how unique Krishna is. These are like conflicting types of characteristics. And the same theme continues in Mantra 5 on page 22. Tadajati tanajati tadure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasyasya bhayata. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he's outside of everything. Again, very extraordinary, very unique. And Mantra 6 on page 27. Yastu sarvani bhutani. Atmanyeva nupashyati. Sarva bhuteshu chatmanam. Tato na vijugupsate. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything nor any being. So as Srila Prabhupada mentions in the first sentence of the purport, this is a description of the Mahabhagavat, the great personality who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the great devotees, advanced devotees, they see, they can actually accommodate these diverse concepts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without becoming confused. But rather they think, oh, very nice, just see how wonderful our Lord is. Just like, you know the story of the cobbler and the Brahmin, I suppose, in Narada Muni? Well-known story. Anyone not know that story? Well, extremely briefly, there was a cobbler and a Brahmin, and they both asked Narada Muni, who was on his way to see Lord Narayan, when they were going to go back to Godhead. So he asked, and Lord Narayan told him that the Brahmin will take an awfully long time, because he's a very puffed up Brahmin, thought he was very intelligent and expert, and so on. So Lord Narayan said, oh, it'll take an awfully long time. But the cobbler, who was a devotee, and very humble, very simple devotee, the Lord said, oh, at the end of this life, he'll come back to me very soon. And then Lord Rand told them that if they ask you what I was doing when you were here, tell them I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. So when he went back and told the Brahmin that he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmin said, what nonsense. No one can thread an elephant through the eye of a needle. So then Narada understood, yes, just see. This is why this man is not going back to Godhead soon. And then he went to the cobbler and told him, actually, you're going back to Godhead at the end of this life. The cobbler was very happy. And then Narada remembered, oh yes, I better tell him this thing. So I told him, actually, you know what? When I was with Lord Narayan, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler became even more ecstatic. And Narada said, well, hang on. What do you think of that? And the cobbler said, oh, yes, that's wonderful. For my lord, that's nothing. And then he gave a very nice example that in the seed seed of a, or whatever, sort of flower pod of a banyan tree, there are many, many seeds. Just one little thing. Many. And you can produce many banyan seeds. I mean, many banyan trees from that. So in other words, the Lord has put so many banyan trees into that pod where all the seeds are. So if he can do that, then putting an elephant through the eye of a needle is nothing. Just small time. So even though on a certain level it's inconceivable, elephant through the eye of a needle sounds crazy. But for the devotee, he didn't have to sit and figure out, well, you know, could he or not, or what about this and that. It was just very ecstatic, very blissful. So for the very advanced devotees, particularly, the statement in Mantra 6 applies. They can accommodate everything of the Lord. There's nothing which will confuse them or bewilder them. But rather they'll be very happy, even with these like diverse conceptions which seem to be, one of them might be true, but the other couldn't be true. If one of them is true, the other couldn't be true. But they're both true. He's very near and he's very far away, like this. So in fact, this mantra 7 on verse 32 is also describing the characteristics of this very advanced devotee who is in this consciousness. In other words, he's in Krishna consciousness, or a very advanced level of Krishna consciousness. Yasmin Saravani Bhutani, Atmaivabhut Vijanata, Tatrako Mohakashoka, Ekatvam Anupasyata. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks, in quality one with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? That's a very, very nice description. He's very blissful, very happy indeed, and no illusion. And Srila Prabhupada makes a little reference, we can just note at the beginning of the purport, that this, as Prabhupada said in the purport of Mantra 6, this applies certainly to the Uttama Adhikari, who is just automatically seeing things in relation to the Lord. He doesn't have to sit and think, oh yes, right, this is related to the Lord in this way or that. But it's just, that's just his vision. He's realized. But here in the purport of Mantra 7, Srila Prabhupada is also applying it to a Madhyama Adhikari who is being educated in these things. And through being educated and developing knowledge, then as he or she is moving in the world and seeing different things and different people, then because that knowledge is there, then the Madhyama Adhikari is not so spontaneous, or it's not automatic like with the Uttama Adhikari. But actually he's seeing effectively in the same way that, oh yes, that's right, this is related with Krishna in this way. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter particularly, and in other chapters also, Krishna says that I am this, I am that, I'm the light of the sun and moon, and I'm the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras, I'm the ability in man. So many things, dozens and dozens of things. So the idea is that the Madhyama Adhikari, or part of being a Madhyama Adhikari, really, you would say, is that through being educated in these concepts, then the Madhyama Adhikari
when the Madhyamadikari sees the sun, then he doesn't just think that, oh, right, there's the sun again. He thinks, oh, yes, right, this is a form of Krishna or a manifestation of Krishna's energy. When he sees some expert intelligence or expert ability in some special human being, then he thinks that, oh, yes, right, he's being empowered by Krishna. He's being given some ability by Krishna. So the Uttama Adhikari is just automatically seeing things like that. But the Madhyama Adhikari is also seeing things like that, not automatically, but on the basis of being educated and developing knowledge. And as a result, as the verse says, what can be illusion or anxiety for him? Even if there's terrible danger, then he knows, this is Krishna. This is Krishna. And he doesn't get upset. There's one conversation of Srila Prabhupada's in Bombay, I think, with one reporter. There was some war for some days between Pakistan and India, and the Pakistani planes were flying over Bombay sometimes, and they would black out the whole city. So in the middle of the interview, some planes came overhead, and there was a blackout. And the reporter, who was actually, because of the war, he was trying to elicit some political statement from Prabhupada, but Prabhupada wouldn't, he wasn't accepting the bait. He was remaining very philosophical and Krishna conscious. Then when the blackout happened, then the man got very forthright, like, you know, just see, I'm right, you know, you should take this war more seriously. He said, sir, here we see it now, right in front of us. And what would you do if a bomb dropped on your head now? Because the planes were up there to drop bombs. And Prabhupada said that if the devotee sees that, oh, here is a bomb coming to land on my head, then the devotee thinks, oh, here comes Krishna in the form of a bomb coming to take me to him. So in this way, what can be illusion or anxiety for a person like that? So, you know, Uttama Adhikari is one thing, obviously. But even Madhyama Adhikari, like a very good Madhyama Adhikari, who's very knowledgeable and very attentive in applying his or her knowledge in Krishna consciousness, then where will the illusion or anxiety be? They'll always be very happy. Okay, let's go on to Mantra 8. Now this has, well, it sort of doesn't have a meter in certain, one of the lines doesn't really have a meter. Sapariyagach chukram makayam avranam. Asnaviram shudam apapa vidham. Kavir manishi paribu swayambur. Yatatatyator tan vyadadhach. Chashvatibhya samabhya. Yes, there's something like that. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, who's unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. So the advanced devotee realizes these things, or at least knows these things. And ultimately, the very advanced devotee realizes these things, or realizes Krishna, and directly enters the association of the Lord. So then, section 4, mantras 9 to 11, we say, the description is that there are different types of non-devotees, and they achieve different, varying degrees of misfortune. In order to advance nicely, a devotee must understand both the wonderful nature of spiritual life and the defects of material life. culminating in understanding Lord Krishna's position as the Supreme Absolute Truth. So we're on page 43 with Mantra 9. Andantamaha pravishanti
Andantamaha
pravishanti Yevidyam upasate
Yevidyam upasate
Tatobuya ivate tamo
Tatobuya ivate tamo
Yauvidyayamrita Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So they're the latter category are going to go to a place which is even worse than the darkest region of ignorance. Pretty heavy. In Mantra 10, on page 48. Anyadevahur vidyaya Anyadahur avidyaya Iti shushruma dhiranam
Yenastadvicha
chakshire. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nescience. So that might appear to be pretty much self-evident. But anyway, when we get to that mantra, we'll see that Srila Prabhupada explains it in a very interesting and very profound way. Mantra 11, page 54. Vidyam cha vidyam cha yas Tadvedo bayam saha Avidyaya mrityum tirtva Vidyayamritam ashnute. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessing of immortality. So it doesn't mean you have to be half in Maya and half in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean that. But we'll explain later when we get there. So Mantra 12 on page 62. Antam tamaha pravishanti
Ye
sambhutim upasate Tato buya ivate tamo Yausambhutyamrita. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. So demigod worshippers and impersonalists are not appreciated in Ishapanishad, the same as in Bhagavad Gita. Then Mantra 13, page 69. Anyad evahu sambhavad
Anyad
ahur asambhavad
Iti
shushruma dhiranam Yenastadvicha chakshire. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes and that another result is obtained by worshipping that which is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. Again, it sounds pretty self-evident, but Prabhupada explains in a very interesting. And the last verse in this section is Mantra 14. So basically, these verses, mantras that we've just read through, they've been talking about knowledge, about ignorance, and knowledge and ignorance, transcendence and being in Maya, sort of contrasting them in a sense. And now Mantra 14 is going to explain about when you're in this position of understanding everything very nicely, how you become fully Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead. Sambhutim cha vinashim cha
Sambhutim cha vinashim cha Yastadvedo bhayam saha. Vinashena mrityum tirtva. Sambhutyam ritam ashnute.
One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead and his transcendental name, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. And then the last section is from verse mantra 15 to 18. And here the devotee, the speaker, is appealing to the Lord for mercy. Apparently at the time of death, bring me to your lotus feet, give me shelter. So we'll read through these verses. They're very, very nice.
Hiranmayena patrena. Satyasya pihitam mukam. Tatvam pushana pavrino. Satya dharmaya drishtaye.
O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Please remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. In mantra 16 on page 91.
Pushane karshe yamasurya prajapatya. Vyuharashman sammuha tejo. Yate rupam kalyanatamam tate pasyami. Yo savasau purusha soham asmi.
O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I. So it's not that he thinks that he's God or, you know, the same as God really, but qualitatively. In fact, this is a bit of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva here. Then mantra 17, second to last mantra on page 97.
Vayora nilam amritam. Ate dambas mantam shariram. Amkrato smarakritam smara. Krato smarakritam smara.
Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you're the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I've done for you. And finally, mantra 18 on page 107.
Agne naya supata rae asman. Vishvani deva vayunani vidvan. Yuyod yasmaj juhuranameno. Buyishtam te nama uktim vidhema.
O my Lord, powerful as fire, omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances and fall on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all that I've done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins, so that there'll be no hindrance to my progress. So in this way, the devotee is surrendering completely to the Lord. And concluding Ishapanishad, and I'm sorry we ran over time a bit. I wonder if anyone has a question or comment. Rataji?
In the beginning part, somebody is explaining that we are followers of Ramachandran. Oh, yeah, yeah, in the introduction.
Our identity is one of
the... yeah.
So I was interested yeah. because there we are spoken about, you know, that we are Krishna servants.
Yes, we're
so
Krishna.
Like more of material,
well, it is. See, it depends which type of Varnashram Dharma. There's Daivi Varnashram and then Asuri Varnashram. There's material, transcendental, Daivi Varnashram, transcendental Varnashram, and Asuri or mundane Varnashram. So the thing is that when people are following Varnashram simply on the material platform and not as a means for elevation to God consciousness, then it's useless. And Lord Chaitanya himself in Chaitanya Charitamrita says, if you follow Varnashram like that, even if you're, you know, the most perfect Brahman or whatever, the result will be you'll go to hell. Not just that, you know, it won't work out so well or you won't become perfect. You'll go to hell. But then Daivi Varnashram means the context in which Krishna consciousness is practiced within the material world. We are unfortunately on the material platform to one degree or another. You know, some of us or you may be more advanced than others, obviously. Some of you may be total newcomers. Some of you may be quite advanced. So Lord Chaitanya also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he makes the point that until a person is completely transcendental, he must follow Varnashram. And this is why in our movement, Srila Prabhupada instituted Varnashram, and we're following Varnashram. And if you're a brahmachari, even if you're a very advanced brahmachari, but you must act in that way, brahmachari, and householder, and sannyasi, and whatever, brahmacharini, vanaprastha. Until you're transcendental, you must follow the principles of Varnashram. Don't start becoming independent and thinking you're transcendental. Now, you're a brahmachari, but you're thinking you're very advanced now. So you can associate with the ladies and, you know, like that, and you won't fall down. No, you must follow the principles, even if you are actually advanced. And in fact, Krishna makes that point to Arjuna in, is it the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Am I right? Okay, sorry. He makes a point like that. That even if you think, because Arjuna is thinking, I don't need to be a Kshatriya. I can forget about being a Kshatriya. So Krishna responds in different ways, but one way is that even if you are actually so advanced, still you should act, do your duty. And then he says, even I do my duty. And he, if anyone's transcendental, it's Krishna. So even he performs his duty, means Varnashram. Yeah. So Varnashram is very important as a context for the development of Krishna consciousness, just as a context. It's not the all in all, but it's the context in which we cultivate Krishna consciousness in the material world. And I'm sorry to have taken up so long and gone over time. And for tonight, read the invocation and mantras 1 and 2.